gentlemen, boys and girls, it's the final Kaufman Show of 2012. Welcome, one and all. I'm Dave. That's Jay.
Hey, Dave.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm excellent.
Good.
You're in my blind spot.
Yeah, I am.
It's a full
house.
It's
kind of creepy, isn't it?
It's a little weird right now.
I'm not exactly behind you, but I'm a little bit back to your left. So
you are exactly
in the blind spot.
If I was a car right now, you would full on be my blind spot.
You would not see me.
No. No.
Yeah.
So let's.
Unless you would turn around.
And
like you're supposed to do, first thing you learn.
Something that's so important in the world of radio,
right,
is eye contact.
Absolutely.
So this should be very interesting.
Yes, it is.
Let's get right down to it. We
yeah,
got a full house.
It's creepy the way you're looking at me right now.
The bleachers are packed.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw the article I tweeted out earlier, but it's a full house at the Olympic Stadium tonight.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. It must be an Alouettes game or something. I don't know. Or maybe Beckham's in town. Who knows? That would make sense because Brian Wilde is here, resident soccer expert.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, right now in this studio, you are the resident soccer
You're a
expert.
Guru right
okay,
now.
In this studio,
a lot better.
I'm
than
a
I
soccer
am.
Expert, no question about it, because you guys are soccer dummies.
Well, I
actually, Francois, are you a
oh,
soccer dummy?
Is there a word for worse than a soccer dummy?
No, that would be it.
Yeah,
the only thing
be
I know
mean.
Is the ball is round. Besides that,
Francois Gagnon from La Presse is here as well. Bonsoir, Francois.
Bonsoir, bonsoir.
Ça va bien?
Très bien, merci. Very happy to be here.
I had asked Francois to join us in studio and then saw, was it you, Brian, or Francois? I can't remember, but one of you tweeted out this weekend that if the stars had aligned and hockey was playing, that you
that
two would be on air doing your show on Saturday night.
Yeah, because I was just suggesting that I get particularly morose on Saturday nights. I get in a bad mood at about 9:30 when the game should be ending and I should be working.
Aw.
And then 11:45 is supposed to be a lot of fun. And then I just, at that moment, I just thought, I wonder what Francois is doing tonight because we're not doing hockey.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I figured it's not Saturday, but we'll make do.
Yeah, no, this is great.
And,
we only get 2 minutes, right?
Well, you know, those nights that are really, really good ones that we
get two minutes, right? Yeah.
Sometimes I start talking, you say, okay,
wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
That's television, man. It goes fast.
Jay, what do you say? We'll give him like at least 4 or 5, right?
Yeah,
these
right.
two guys?
Yeah. Actually, we'll
see.
The intro's just finished and you're done.
Yeah.
You gotta go. Sorry.
We'll see how they do.
You guys are in luck tonight.
Bonjour and bonsoir.
Jay and I are gonna get some coffee and we're just gonna leave you guys to
open the lines. We'll have a great time.
Yeah, that's right. Just teach us how to work the board.
Well, thankfully, Jimmy
well,
won't go
Jimmy's
anywhere.
Over
oh,
there,
okay, we
there.
Really don't need you.
No, no. We're the useless parts.
See you, fellas.
On the Kaufman Show tonight.
So, Francois.
Oh.
So, gentlemen, I wanted to do an entire segment right off the top and not mention the word Habs, but there it is.
Oh, okay. I screwed that up.
No. I'm totally kidding. I can't have you guys in here, our two hockey experts on the show. This must just suck for both of you.
You want to say how much it sucks first,
Francois? No, you know what? I'll let you go first.
Well, it really sucks.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, everybody.
Well, I will
Plastic,
surprise
please.
You guys. I will surprise you guys, and I will tell you that if they want to do it that way, well, we should not care about them. And tonight at the LDS, we had the chance to have Eric Gay with us, who won the third place, the bronze medal Saturday in the it was in Val Gardena, the downhill race. And, you know, year after year after year, well, besides the last lockout in this one,
right?
You know, I do mostly hockey. Like 95, 96, 97% of what I do is hockey.
Right.
And I love it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the job. I like to work with Brian. I like to exchange tweet with fans that disagree with me, sometimes agree with me. But since September, I've been doing some different things. You know, I've been to Russia. I've been to Chicago for the Ryder Cup. You know, I'm more open to things that are happening around.
I've been to Vanier College. I've also been to Dawson College.
I've been to the Vanier Cup, too, and to the Craig Cup.
I went to Vanier College.
I went to Shawinigan. I went to Shawinigan to watch the juniors play.
Well, that's good.
That was fun.
I saw little Bobby. He's 9 years old. He likes fencing.
Oh, boy.
But I see that Mr. Wilde has a very different view of this than Mr. Gagnon.
Yes, he does.
Well, he seems to have gotten rather more excited gigs than me. No.
Well,
I'm not complaining what I've done.
No,
I'm very lucky. Don't get me wrong. I just prefer doing the Montreal Canadiens.
Of course, yeah. Yes. And you know what? I know that when the Canadiens will be back, even though hockey fans say I'll never go back to the Bell Center. They will all go back and they will call you. And, you know, and some nights that you will want to talk about amateur sport or something different, there will be a question. So what do we do with Gomez? Yeah. You know, and it's always like that. And it's okay. We live, we breathe hockey, and it's fine. But this year, they put us aside. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for a lockout. You know, I've been on the phone all day again, and I'm fed up of that lockout. But, you know, I've been talking to one really big agent today and two good GMs who told me, put us in the room, 20 minute tops, it's done. Because it's that close. But they are fighting over principles, and principles are important. And I'm telling you, I know about that. But on the other hand, if they would care about the game, if they would care about the fans, if they would care about something else than only those little numbers and tweaks that they don't want to go forward on, there will be some hockey for the last month.
Yeah, for sure. But we know the world we live in, and this is business. It's so much bigger than the individual fan. And they can weigh the fact that a few fans are going to be upset today against the fact that you just stated before, everybody's going to come back.
I agree with you. It's business, and it's a huge business. Not as big as the NBA or the NFL that we just watched. Well, when you look at the Jets, it's not a big, big business. But anyway.
It's close to the NFL.
It's close, yeah. It's closer to the NFL than the Canadians, that's for sure. But still, the numbers are already there. Money-wise, they almost agree on almost everything. It's a question of, I will not move of a five-year deal. And agents are telling their clients, take the 10-year CBA. Don't bother about that. It doesn't matter. And just find a way to get 6 years for a length of a contract and give out the fact that they want to have 5% fluctuations on 1 year to the other. Give that away. Go for 7 and 9, go for 6 and 8, and we have a deal. And that's the problem right now. And, you know, I never thought I would say that, but I think right now that somebody in the NHL don't want hockey to be back. And that guy would be Bettman, because he's toast. I mean, as soon as this CBA will be signed, he will not see the color of the next one.
See, I don't know if I agree with that.
You think he's going to get fired?
I don't know.
I think he's going to get – I think he's going to leave. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
The only way he gets fired
well,
is if
the news of the day.
I think so.
I didn't know you thought that. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Gary Bettman finished.
Because there's many
there it is.
Many owners.
Good night.
Plaskett, please. The only way that Bettman gets fired, in my opinion, Francois, is if the players are perceived as the winners of this. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, but Even though he wins in some way, he will lose on the public image. Whatever he does, the owners will be happy, but, you know, fans will look at him as the commissioner who locked out that league 3 times in 19 years. And nobody else did that before, and I hope that nobody else will do it again. My problem with this is that the next CBA will probably end up in a lockout too, because at that point they will go for guaranteed contract, and then the players will come back and say, we don't want to play a salary cap. But you know what? Maybe it will not happen that way, because if the players go for the decertification and then the NHL says, oh, fine, then starting tomorrow, contracts are void everywhere. We will start from scratch next fall. In 2 falls, in 3 falls, I don't know. But, you know, now the players will be all by themselves. They will be, as we say in French, petite et moyenne entreprise. They will be their own boss.
Right.
They will deal one by one by one with the teams. And then, where is that going to bring? 30 guys, 40 guys will make all the money. And the other ones, you don't want to play for $500,000? I'll get somebody else to do it.
Sure.
And that will be exactly what they are looking to go away from. And I don't think that it's a sound move for them, because I think it's going to be worse. What is in front of them now, if they go through all the process, I think would be a lot worse than what they left on the table 2 weeks ago.
Brian, what
but
do you
I think what you're only mentioning the one side of who has it worse if decertification goes through. And I agree it would be worse for the players, because they have guaranteed money right now all across the board. But every time I hear in an argument, and Twitter very much schools one's ability to see both sides of a coin. And so I've done a lot of seeing both sides of the coin. So when I hear that side of the coin, I say to myself, Francois, you're right there. But I think you also have to see the other side of the coin, because the ownership of the NHL has a lot to lose too, because they have a guaranteed system right now, a system that they can rely on, a system that will in the end be a 50-50 system, which is what they've been fighting for. And I don't think just that the NHL is nervous about decertification. I think every league except baseball is nervous about decertification. The National Football League has a system right now in which they don't even guarantee contracts to players. They can say, you're going to make this much money, but if you get injured or we don't like you anymore,
you're gone.
Mm-hmm. Now, what a system that is as a cap system for the National Football League. The NBA just signed for 10 years as well.
After decertifying,
starting the process.
Right.
They never got to it. They just did the letter,
fact,
just as well as the NHL.
The process.
But the point is, at the end of the day, you've got guarantees for leagues that if it goes so far as gets to court, and you find a liberal judge who says, you know what, caps are anti-competitive. Restricting free agency is anti-competitive, because there are no others but professional athletes who are told at what point the money they can make is capped out at and what city they are allowed to play in. So it is antitrust. It is anti-competition to the wrong judge or the right judge, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, right.
And so for both and for all leagues, save baseball that doesn't have a cap and has gone the revenue-sharing route, which I think the National Hockey League should have done because they have so many weak franchises.
Baseball does have a soft cap, Brian.
Soft, okay.
You have to pay, I think, $2 for every buck you go over.
Well,
yeah, but it's the
luxury tax, but it pays out in terms of that the revenue goes to the Kansas City Royals, is my point.
But, Brian, okay. As you know, I always agree with you. Or mainly.
Wow.
I always mainly, mostly, sometimes agree with you.
But sometimes. Unless you're wrong, and then I call you an idiot.
Yeah. I would never do that publicly. The thing is that the antitrust and everything, I agree with you completely, but if there's no union to take care of it, then you're a subcontractor of my enterprise.
Yeah, and then it's
My name is the Toronto
Maple
Leafs.
And you know what it is, Francois? It's soccer in Europe is what it is.
Exactly.
And who's winning there?
Well, it's the huge.
You know
stars.
Who's winning?
The huge stars.
Huge stars and huge teams.
That's right.
And everybody else is a loser.
But what does the marginal player make?
The marginal player?
Yeah.
In
like,
soccer?
Yeah. Like
I don't think
he
does
Steve
poorly.
Steve
Bajan
on Arsenal.
Yeah. Well, I think they don't do all that well. I mean, I think the money is concentrated to the great stars and the great teams. And you've got Manchester United, Chelsea, and Man City, and you know the Sunderlands. The Luton towns.
Real Madrid and
Spain, you've got two, Barcelona and Real Madrid, that dominate, and the rest just hope to survive, basically, especially
and
in a 25%
unemployment
country.
The rest is a nursery.
Country.
They found young players.
That's
they
right.
develop those players, and as soon as they are good, they sell them to rich teams, and then they get the money back, so that's the only way for them to make the money.
But
the,
I least think they're up, at least they're up front about it, though.
Yeah,
you
but
have
I
your
think
fourth
it,
division
think,
team, and you know, and if you play well, you can make it up to Division III next year. But
yeah,
if you finish in last,
yeah,
I mean, imagine
Division
if the,
three, wow.
But imagine if the Habs were relegated for last season.
Well,
you know,
that
if
that's what
if
happened
you,
last year, they finished 15th. Exactly.
If you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, though, you shouldn't be all that scared, because the Canadiens are basically Manchester United.
Well, you mean because they have the money behind
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the interest in the fans. You're always going to have 21-273. So
that's right.
You know, if it goes that route as a Habs fan, I wouldn't be necessarily that afraid.
See, I don't know you if
you would
you're
just
always...
sit there and go get Sidney Crosby. But we are really far down the road here on this discussion, and I don't think we ever get that far because of what you initially said, Francois. We are basically at a crossroads for already 10 days, and I think we will be on a crossroads, and we'll start at January 20th, 2013, just like 1995. And they'll play a 48-game schedule because Gary Bettman, in his moment of haste and emotion that night in New York City, basically told everybody that was his plan.
Yeah.
Well,
so we're wasting 3 weeks here for the 1 year or 2 years from 5 to 7 on the contracts that is going to decide how this ends. We're going to lose a month over a maximum 5 year or a maximum 6 or even a maximum 7 if the players do very, very well.
Very
but that's
well.
All we're fighting for.
Exactly.
Because why should the players argue that a 5 year CBA is no good and they want a 10? That doesn't make any sense because every time they go to the well, they get slaughtered. They got slaughtered in 94. They got slaughtered in 204. They're getting slaughtered in 212. Why would they want a five-year CBA?
That's why they brought in Donald Fear, though.
If I got beaten up three straight times by François Nebral, which I would, I don't want to fight François that fourth time. When I look at him and I say, hey, buddy, you've already beat the crap out of me three times. Let's not do it a fourth time, at least for a couple more weeks.
You know, and you're right over this. My problem with that scenario is that last year, NFL and the NBA, they used that decertification
as a bargaining chip.
Francois? I think Rorschach Rose, and I said that as a joke.
Proskauer Rose.
Yeah, I know. Yes. I said Rorschach Rose on purpose. I think that law firm learned from that moment.
Yes, but I
from
think
last
that
year.
I think they were surprised, and
they didn't have a plan last year, and this time they went,
well,
we got to have a
you
plan.
You opened the door widely to where I'm going. I'm going exactly there.
That's why we work together so well.
I think the NHL...
You guys can go again.
I think that the NHL, because what happened last year with the NBA and the NFL, they were caught by surprise, even though they are much bigger leagues and stronger leagues. This time, the NHL was ready. And what happened on Friday, there was just that rumor of their certification. We're going to go for a vote. And what happened? Boom. Boom.
The plan.
Two lawsuits came down.
Yep. Yep.
So I think, and I might be like negative too much tonight over this, but I think that the NHL felt strongly about that possibility, that they find out some mercenary lawyers that will go making the big bucks just to get away to... I don't want to use a bad word in English, but to
dig the knife. I'm going to help
dig
you.
Dig the knife. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because you were going to swear, weren't you?
I don't know.
That would have been awesome.
I've seen that face.
Yeah. The S word is a swear word.
Not in English, sort of.
Not on this station.
Actually, can I tell you something? In Alberta, we'd probably be arrested.
I would be in jail.
In Quebec, no problem.
No problem. Well, I was using the first four words of the word screwdriver.
Yeah.
So I think that's exactly where they want to go. Players, you want to use this as a bargaining chip, as a way to put your fist on the table? I don't give a damn, because I'm going to countersuit you. And we are ready, which the NBA and the NFL were not last year. And that scares me, because if they go that way, and if they go that path, then we will not have hockey this season, which I still think is in jeopardy, even though I'm an optimist, cautiously optimistic, but optimist. And if they go that path, then... what's going to happen next year? Is Sidney Crosby going to play in Pittsburgh? I don't know.
Well, nothing's left.
And
if
Minnesota,
the whole process goes through,
nothing left.
There's nothing left if the judge rules that it's antitrust and anti-competitive. And if he rules it's not, then the NHL players have absolutely nothing to stand on at all, because they played their last card.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm so fed up about all this that today for my – well, actually it's today – for my paper this morning, I just draw a scenario for a movie.
I thought you were going to say you were drawing, because you are a writer and you need to do better than just pictures.
Oh, no, that would be tough. But, you know, the first scene of
that... It's not Le Devoir, Brian.
the first scene of that movie is Craig Leopold and one of the owners of the Nashville Predators that are going for the throat of Gary Bettman, because if nothing else happens for next year and everything is back in the air, you know... Minnesota will have gave $24 million, $12 million to Parise, $12 million to Suter as signing bonus, and they will never play a minute for them, maybe.
Oh, wow.
And Nashville will have gave
$13
million
to
Shea Weber that will end up probably in Philadelphia anyway.
That's amazing.
So all that waste of money over that stupidity, and the worst of all, you know, when you think about it, in 2004 – there was a lockout that vanished an entire season. The guys came back. They said they were on their knees, and they took a salary cap and a CBA that they were ready to reconduct this year, but they are in lockout because they were not able to get it. When you think at all about that, you know, all these fluctuations between what was bad in 2005, which is now too good for the league in 2012, it's completely silly.
Well, and you don't even have to go that far back, because you can say how completely silly it was on September 14th, even, when they signed $250 million worth of contracts and then one day later said, we're broke.
Yeah. There's no way we can live with that.
Yeah. We just signed Ryan Suter. We got no money. We're out.
And that's why I've been saying all along that the only responsible of this lockout are the owners, But the problem is that they are the ones who are dealing with the big buck, and that's why the players will have to cave at one point. Maybe cave is too strong of a word, but they are the ones who will have to make the most concessions,
yeah,
which they have done already, and they will need to make a couple more if they want to come back in this type of agreement. Otherwise, they will be left with nothing.
We can sit here and call it concede, but really, if you're a player, it's going to be cave.
Okay.
I think that's the fair way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, we can talk about it diplomatically. They're the ones who are going to feel the pinch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
it's a blow.
They'll be okay.
As negotiations go, they got slaughtered. As lifestyles go, there's, you know, I don't know if I'd say they're feeling the pinch.
Yeah, but I think
they're going to still do okay.
I think
but
more of the,
in terms of how the negotiations went, yeah, they were completely slaughtered.
And guys, look at
massively.
It this way. Look at it this way. That's the worst for the players because whatever we say, slaughtered, caving, concessions, you know, in the face of the fans, they still make so much money that
exactly.
Nobody's taking their poorly or nobody's going to say, oh, poor players, you made so many good big
no,
concessions.
Never.
Nobody's going to go that far. But, you know, the truth of the reality, as Brian said, is that they've been giving out the last three times or the last two times, and they will give up a big chunk again this time.
And before I hear the music started, don't forget the other side of the coin of that. The other side is extremely rich as well.
Are there three sides on your coins? Or
no, just the two, the owners.
They're
also extremely wealthy.
Because you went from one side to the
richer
other.
Than astronauts. We're debating.
No, you said the players were wealthy. Yeah, I want to make sure everybody understood that the owners were also extremely wealthy.
A lot more, yeah.
I'm having fun talking economics. Who knew?
Oh, yeah, we're...
They should teach this way in high schools.
Hey.
This is
smart
sports
kids.
Listen, kids, if you want to be a sports reporter, you have to stay up really late, don't sleep much, and go to economics now because you do a lot more than that.
It was to my understanding there would be no math during the
Kaufman show.
But it seems, that's why I've been quiet the whole time. I don't know what
everybody.
The hell's going on.
We're gonna
what is this
you,
about three sides of a coin? What?
I don't you know what? We'll get on that one in a second.
As we say in French, it's la quadrature du cercle. That one is even tougher.
Yeah.
The three sides are your side, my side, and the truth, I think.
There it is.
This is the Kaufman show. Although, really, it feels like the Gagnon Wild episode right now, and we're having a blast.
No, you guys can talk, too. Jay,
go ahead.
Take us to break, Jay.
We talk all the time. You want to take us to break, Jay?
You're listening to The Kaufman Show on TSN 690.
Wow. That guy's awesome.
Right, Brian Wilde, I love you. Oh, I wish this was on camera.
Yeah, like
what was that?
Gowan, eh?
I was doing the guitar.
That was his,
Pete Townsend?
It was his Pete Townsend.
Yeah,
that's
Pete
what
Townsend,
I thought.
But I'm sitting. You think it's easy to do Pete Townsend, Jimmy? No.
Hey, guys, any one of you went to the Who's concert?
No, I saw them about 5 years ago in Ottawa.
Oh,
and
really?
It was a fantastic concert.
I went to Leonard Cohen.
Well, yes, I saw that.
I wish I would have been
awesome.
Able to get there.
I was at a punk show that night, Brian.
At a who?
At a punk show? A punk show.
Oh, punk.
At Titus Andronicus.
My wife is probably at bed now, so I can say it. I asked for a personal favor to go to the Who, but I've been out, I was out for like an assignment for like 10 days before that. It was a Grey Cup before, a Vanier Cup, and so the Who were here on a Tuesday night, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I said, you know, maybe, no.
Aww.
I didn't have the time to say, you know, she Aww. Looked at me and I said, okay, I won't go. I won't go.
You know what I think is going to happen? I think there's going to be, it's going to be like the late 60s. I think there's going to be a second wave of rock star deaths. All these old guys are going to drop dead on stage because they're touring like crazy. They're not making any more money off their CDs.
27?
And they're all going to die.
27 and 72.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I mean, 27 is that iconic age where all the rock stars drop dead?
Yeah.
So 72.
72.
72 yeah. is the new 27.
Right. Exactly. I want to go to these shows just to see if one of them actually drops dead. It'd be interesting to me.
Did any of you guys catch any of the Stones pay-per-view show this weekend?
No.
They did Tumbling Dice with Springsteen, had Lady Gaga come on and do Gimme Shelter. A few other things here and there I thought was they still got it.
Well, of course.
And Jagger moves. I mean, the guy's got more energy than really just about any artist I've seen.
Oh yeah, that's true. When you look at of all the other ones, I don't know about Roger Daltrey and the voice. For me, the voice
was
is better
there,
now.
Daltrey?
At the
Who one?
Of course.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So they were all there?
Well, two of them.
All two of them. Yeah. There's
Who is just two? Now?
It's just two. Yeah. Well, I mean, Keith Moon in the 70s, and John Entwistle died about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
In
they didn't replace him? They got two guys up there?
Well, no.
No.
The drummer for The Who is Ringo Starr's son, Brian.
Thank you.
It's Zach Starkey, who also plays with... He was in the... Oh, no, I guess not. Who else? Oh, he played with Oasis.
Really?
I can't believe I just outed myself like that. Jeez.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, I like
what,
Oasis.
What, with Oasis?
Yeah.
No. Of course.
Such a guilty pleasure.
Anyway, I'm sorry I asked that question.
Jimmy, let's go out on Supersonic at the break.
Let's not, Jimmy, please.
You got it from your blonde side there. Boom.
Yeah, I did. Hey, it happens. You sit in front of a mic, you end up telling all your secrets.
Yeah, because I'm not going
to
say that.
Good. So we've come to one simple conclusion on the Kaufman Show tonight, which is that Francois is loving the lockout. He's getting to fulfill all these wonderful sports dreams throughout the year. He hasn't said it yet, but I have a feeling he's not saying that he's going to the Super Bowl because Brian will run out of the room screaming.
Especially if the Niners get there.
Well, Brian will, of course, be covering the Garbage Bowl in Loyola on Sherbrooke Street West on Super Bowl Sunday.
You know what?
Thanks, Dave.
I'm going to go out for a playoff weekend somewhere, but for the Super Bowl...
I come.
Of course. You're more than welcome.
But for
the Super Bowl, I have some colleagues at La Presse who are following the NFL week in, week out for the season. And my colleague, Philippe Quentin, is a lot more NFL prone than I am. So if he wants to get there, I think it would be only smart from my part to go. But one thing I'm planning to go is the Masters this spring.
Well, that's pretty cool.
50.
Are you going to the World Juniors?
I'm not going to the World Juniors. I was debating over that. The problem is that because...
It's an UFA.
Well, I don't care about UFA. I talked to Igor Kravchuk, who's a nice man from Montreal, who played for the Ottawa Senators, God bless him, in the years that they were not...
Kravchuk was there in Edmonton when I was the
And
Oilers
Kravchuk,
guy.
His hometown is UFA. So when I was asking about UFA, I said, you should go. And I said, well, it's far. He said, well, it's not a village. There's more than 1 million of population there. It's a real city. I mean, it's big. Of course, it's far east, and it's going to be darn cold. But, it's a nice place to go. My problem with that is that we don't have a paper on the 25th and 26th, and on the 1st and 2nd.
So,
if you're asking your paper to put that load of money, because it's a lot of money, to go on a special assignment like that one, you want to make sure that you're going to give a lot in return. So when I went to the KHL trip in Moscow, I worked a lot, but I was glad to do it because I got space in the paper and I was able to learn things and to transmit those things to the readers. If you go there and you're writing and you're tweeting, but the main thing is to put it in the paper, it's not available, then I think it's a waste of money, and I'd rather take that money to go to the Masters than to go to UFA, even though it seems to be...
Sounds a little more appealing to go down to Georgia. Yeah.
The first thing that jumps out of me looking out on Wikipedia about UFA is that the city began as a fortress built on the orders of Ivan the Terrible in 1574.
I just love his
That's
choices.
Pretty badass.
I'm like, little Jimmy Archery? Or little Bobby the Falconer?
Right.
Francois, go to the Gulag or go to the Masters?
Well, there's some fights that you don't want to lose, or some that you really want to win. So
you're picking
Masters,
your battles.
That's right. The Masters, I want to win.
Yeah, I would understand. Following the advice of Napoleon and maybe not going to Russia in winter, instead to Georgia in the springtime.
That's a really good point. Yeah, really good point.
So all to say that obviously Francois' experience during this lockout has been more pleasant professionally.
Mm-hmm.
What about personally? Do you find that you have more time to enjoy yourself?
Personally, I want to watch hockey.
Well, okay, and that's the thing. Like, I don't miss it that much. Yeah. I really, really, truly don't. You're listening to the home of the Habs, TSN 690. Just, I feel like whenever I say that I don't miss hockey, I have to plug hockey. For all of you out there that do miss it, I don't. There's more stuff to do this fall. I don't feel like I haven't missed a beat.
I miss my job more. I miss the aspect of my job that I love. That's the big joy. You know, do I miss Columbus against St. Louis on a Tuesday? No, not really.
Do you miss Columbus against Montreal on a Tuesday?
Columbus is never really that exciting. You name five players on their team now.
And right, even Columbus is not that crazy.
No.
Right. You'd rather go to Russia and win.
No, but there's a buzz in the city, too, you know, when they're playing and they're playing well. There's a buzz in the city. There's an excitement.
When they're playing well is a really important point.
Yeah, and but I think even that when I they're lousy, my... there's still a lot of conversation.
There's still a buzz when they're lousy.
You know,
it's just another kind of buzz.
Yeah, exactly. It's just something that's lacking in this town. I mean, this town just absolutely loves its Montreal Canadiens.
I don't know if
no
I prefer the lack of conversation versus the conversation about how horrible the Habs were last year. I found that to be a very depressing conversation to have day in, day out. I don't know. I mean, you can debate as to what's more exciting, a conversation about collective bargaining.
Oh, I'm telling you that the collective bargaining discussions are boring. I mean, especially like nothing
has
been happening.
Well, waiting in a hotel lobby for 11 hours must be a blast for you.
Well, I was lucky because I didn't go there. And, you know, I'm surprised. I told my boss, I said in September, if you believe that you're going to make me follow this, you're wrong. And wow. It didn't
That's
say
clout,
anything,
ladies
but
and gentlemen.
It got me, I didn't go to lobbies, but, you know, you're on the, well, you know, as much as I do, then this little thing here called the BlackBerry or his iPhone or whatever you want to call it, sometimes is better than 10 hours in a lobby because the person that you want to talk to is not around being seen talking
right.
to you.
Mm-hmm,
so
right.
This is perfect. You know, I've used this in scrums where I've been asking a question of somebody that is about 5 feet from me, but I know for a fact that he will not want to talk to me in front of others. So you just punch out a question, you have a great answer, and then you go. So why go to New York to do that when I can do it from my office?
Yeah, I just asked Dave a question by my iPhone while you were talking.
Oh, really?
No.
Where's the off switch for him?
The answer is 17.
17.
Yeah. You asked the question. Gave you the answer.
I don't know what my question was.
Well, I thought it was about sides to a coin or something. I don't know. Hope you were listening before, people.
Yeah.
Continuity, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, it's a Jeopardy thing now. The answers goes, and we have to find out the question.
Oh, God, that won't confuse people at all, will it? So if this continues out, I mean, how do your jobs change over the next year?
Oh, my God, over the next year?
Well, let's assume that they're not going to play this season.
Well, January, February, and March will be tough. I mean, since September, we were able to do things, but at one point, when nothing else will matter than that lockout, you know, and we will not be able to talk about are they coming back or not, and suddenly it's going to be like a big void, a big emptiness, it's going to be tough. I mean, I will turn around and go to junior games because it's an interesting hockey. One funny thing, La Ligue de Hockey Senior, or North American Hockey League, that goon league that used to be a goon league, is a much better league now. And they are offering a really good game and a really good product, and nobody's been talking about it. And I did an interview a couple of weeks ago with the new commissioner, and he said, can I ask you a question? And I said, yeah, of course. He said, why haven't you talked about us for the last 4 years? And I said, you know what? It's true. It's not four. It's seven. We talked about them in the last lockout. It was a goon league. It was a gong show. I nailed them many times. And we, as media outlets, we told them, clean up your game and we'll come back. They've cleaned up the game and nobody came back. And this year, remember that column was meanwhile in the Ligue Nord-Américaine de Hockey. And things are interesting. They play only on weekends so that guys that are working can play hockey in the weekend. Guys that are coming out from junior and have find a way to finish up their school. They go at school from Monday to Friday. They play hockey. They make $400, $500, $600 a weekend. So it's a good segue between the junior years and the real life that is coming.
Yeah, but I think it's foolish to think that sells newspaper copies.
You're right.
And truthfully, the only time it does sell newspaper copies is when you're writing about the Goon League.
I agree. I agree with you, but I mean, if I miss hockey, I will go to Blainville. I will go in Shawinigan. Mm-hmm. I will go in Sorel or Cornwall, who have a new team in the Ligue Nord-Américaine de hockey. So if you really, or I could go and see the Stars, that wonderful women's team that don't get the exposure that they
deserve.
I've
been there 4 times.
This year?
Well,
to
good
the Stars.
For you.
I've done stories on them.
I wanted to go many times this season because I think they deserve that. Because every 4 years, we make a big fuss of how good they are because they are good at the Olympics.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But between those two Olympics, we don't talk about them.
Well, you could argue that the Stars, the Montreal Stars in the Canadian Women's Hockey League with about 8 national teamers, when they play the Boston Blades, the American representative in that league and the only one, with about 8 to 10 American, that is actually the second best hockey game for women in the world. The
exactly.
best game is Canada versus the U.S., mm-hmm. and the second best game is the Montreal Stars against the Boston Blades.
Yeah, and
because the third best game is Canada against Sweden, and that's not as good.
No. But, Brian, when they're wearing the Canada jersey and
when there are, like, you know, 250
Pacific
people.
Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that's very good hockey in terms of you've got the world basically going crazy for it, and then just about the same lineup mm-hmm. without the flags on has about 90 people there.
Right.
And that's crazy.
Paying $5 a pop.
Exactly. And that's just nutty considering what the flag means and the Olympic chance for medal or even world championships.
Yep.
But back to your question about what you've been doing, it's been,
yeah.
for me in the last 3 months, every morning's been kind of, or the night before, thinking what I was going to do. It's been this realization that tomorrow you had to be inspirational. You had to create, and you had to really activate your brain. And sometimes when you cover the Montreal Canadiens, you've done it so long, you're so knowledgeable about the way the story works and the storyline of the day goes. It's always in front of you.
Yeah.
And you know how to do it. And it's not surprising, but every day for the last 3-4 months, my job has always, every single day, been surprising. 9 times out of 10, I'm meeting someone for the first time. Sometimes it's little Jimmy, he's 9. I spend about 5 minutes going, now don't be nervous. It's television. We'll use only the good stuff. Look at me, not the camera. Do you need to go pee? Okay. When you're finished, come on back. No. You know,
sounds like my other job.
Yeah. Gee, that's perfect. If you want to start again, we can start again. But when, you know, when you're finished getting through all of the part where everybody you're talking to is incredibly nervous because it's the first time they've been on camera, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you're left with a story where you're actually rather surprised yeah. how much you got into it. You're in a bad mood at 9 a.m. and in a great one at 6.
That's cool.
And then at 9 p.m., you're in a bad mood again.
Yeah, but it's a public service, and you did, you know, something interesting.
They've been really great.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed the stories, and a lot of times they've been really, really inspirational, and in some cases, for them, life-changing.
Of course. And they are a lot more gracious to you than any hockey player.
Oh, absolutely. And that's been a very interesting thing, to actually have this moment when you come in and everybody's thrilled to see you mm-hmm. instead of, oh, here's Wild again. Oh, I can't stand this.
What is he going to ask me again?
What's he going to ask? Oh, but here they all come now.
There are some misconceptions into the fans. Like, you know, the two most questions that I've got since the start of the lockout, first thing is, when is it going to end? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like yeah. you know.
And the
I'd like the
question,
hour as well, please.
Yeah. And the second question is, what do you do of their time? You have nothing to do now. And people think that because the Canadians are not there, that we don't have anything to do. When the Canadians are there, it's easy. I can tell you in September what I'm going to do, February the 10th, March the 9th.
You have a pocket schedule.
I know exactly where I'm going to be, what I'm going to do. And some nights I look at the schedule and say, oh, this one's going to be a real bummer. And 9 times out of 10, or maybe 7 out of 10, I will be right about that. Now, you know, you don't know. You have to find things like Brian was telling, and fans things that, or hockey fans, because hockey's not there, they feel that there's nothing going around. And I think it's our mandate to make sure that they realize that there's a lot of things going around all the time, but because the Canadians and hockey is there, we don't know about it. So great for Brian to make sure that little Jimmy here or little Bobby over there is
little Bobby the Falconer.
The Falconer is getting known in his community, and the next day at school, you know, there's a pretty girl that's gonna look at him that never looked at him and say, "Oh, I saw you on TV last night."
I know who that is. I actually know who that is. It's a Sun Youth quarterback. It's a Sun Youth quarterback for the Hornets. I think he had a very good day the next day.
I believe his mom is a frequent listener of the show, isn't she?
I believe so.
Are we talking about Effie?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember when you tweeted out that story. That was very cool.
Yeah.
Now,
And again, you meet a lot of new people, and there is an appreciation for what you do. I mean, that was, in fact, what happened is that the editor for the first version that ran that night of the game when they lost to North Shore
Pirates.
I forget.
Lions.
Buccaneers.
Yes, thank Lions. You. The Lions.
Oh my.
And somehow the editor and I didn't get the QB clip in. And, you know, she's a lovely, lovely person. She would, you know, she would not criticize me. She's so kind and so appreciative that we went out there. But she was hurt. Yeah. I mean, where's my hero?
Oh, no.
So, man, I made sure the next day. And would I have done that, you know, for Josh George's? Well, first of all, he wouldn't have cared.
Right.
But, you know, it's just it's a totally different world, and it has some ups for sure. The people you touch is definitely an up. The things you learn, the inspiration you get from them, how much you have to work to finish with a product you're proud of. Those are all very much pluses. And then the minuses are that you love hockey. The city loves hockey. The city's passionate about it. The province is passionate about it. There's nothing finer than a playoff game when everybody is going wild.
Sure.
There's nothing finer since 1995 for me here covering the Montreal Canadiens than that playoff run through Washington and Pittsburgh that ended in Philadelphia. As wonderful as all of the last 3 and 4 months have been in one way, I trade it all in for another long playoff run.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. It's different.
Yeah.
I mean, of course.
But not the Masters, eh?
I know.
He loves his golf.
It ain't no
he loves his
golf.
I'm
sorry. Yeah.
We've got Francois Gagnon from La Presse and Brian Wild from CTV in studio. I'm going to force them to stay for one more segment because this is so much fun. It's Farrar and Kaufman, final Kaufman show of the year.
No!
Don't worry, Brian. We'll be back in 2013.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll write that.
Good. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar. Our swan song for 2012 and what a year it's been. We've got Brian Wild and Francois Gagnon in studio, and I think we have talked hockey enough.
Yep.
We have said enough about the great Canadian game that we don't get to watch the well-paid people play.
You have another guest following us.
We do. Bruce Arthur will be on the program tonight.
Wow.
Yeah. This is
great guy.
I'm imagining
great writer.
This is the latest radio appearance Bruce Arthur's done in a very long time, I would imagine.
Oh, well.
But, yeah, because he's on the reporters.
That's right.
For TSN, right?
That's the early one, right?
Yeah. I don't get on the reporters.
You know what?
Hey, have you been on the reporters?
I've been on the reporters once.
Were you?
Or twice. When they got the All-Star game here, Century Year.
Oh, yeah.
I did it. And I remember that. And I was so...
And you've been on TSN all the time in the intermissions?
Intermissions.
For their
was,
local package
that,
here,
that's
right?
That's right. But the report is going back to that.
Those are all impressive things. Oh. But most impressive so far, Francois, is you haven't actually mentioned how bad of a drinker I am. And I really appreciate that because... One occasion we were in Philadelphia together, yep. And I can't remember who bought each other the beer, whether I bought you or you bought me. It's not important. But when the person who was finishing the transaction with the lady, I looked and I said, "Cheers, Francois," and he was done. And I hadn't picked up my beer yet, and yet the first person to be drunk was me.
Okay, but bad drinker has a connotation that I don't think applies to you, Brian.
Well, no,
you are
I'm
a
happy.
Very
I just
affable
can't.
Drinker.
I'm affable. I just can't hold it.
I can tell you a couple of stories, but I won't.
Go ahead, Jay.
Well, Brian.
When Joe was here, right? When Joe Kearns was
yeah,
here.
Yeah. Well, Brian, after one Guinness, I mean, it's all.
It's
over.
On, baby.
It's all over, but the crying.
I'm all in after one.
I got three words for you: Guinness, Irish, jig, and that's all I gotta say. That's all I gotta say between me and Brian. It was actually in front of the entire pub. He just grabbed me out of my chair, and we proceeded to dance around.
Oh, really? Well, yes. That was a Guinness. In Philly, it was a Coors Light.
It was a Coors Light? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. This is
3.5%
less and less impressive.
I can't take this. This is 4% American light beer.
Laval's,
I'm done.
Laval's tap water is stronger than the Coors Light.
It's true.
I think that would be a perfect time to remind everybody to call Nez Rouge this holiday
yep,
season.
That's
yeah,
true.
That's right.
Let's do that.
I think that's,
well, we walked to our hotels in Pittsburgh,
of course.
Right? Oh, come on. We're responsible. Yes. We didn't have
all the
cars.
Way from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, huh?
Oh, I can't remember.
Of a
the city. Didn't I tell you?
Oh, yeah, you were too busy tapping the Rockies.
Didn't I tell you I had two? Don't remember the town.
You went that far? I can't remember that.
I don't know what to say anymore. I don't know how to segue to what I thought we were going to talk
about. We were talking about Bruce Harter, who is a really, really fine columnist, open-minded, and he have the choice of words. You know, English is not my first language, so sometimes I read columns. I really appreciate Bruce. Chris Stevenson, CJ, a good buddy
sure.
of mine, who is for me is a wonderful writer. Sometimes I read what he writes and I say, oh, God, why didn't I thought about that lead or something? You know, there are some ways that guys are bringing stories, and those two guys are really, really, really good for me anyway.
Bruce Harter is my favorite columnist.
Oh, yes.
And it was a pleasure to have him on in the summer, and it was great that he accepted to come on again for our year-ender tonight. What Bruce does, I find, and what he does quite well, is he really rides that line between sports and the
yeah.
real world.
That's true.
And frankly, if you look at his Twitter feed, the real world kind of trumps it.
And he's probably more interested in the real world as much as he loves sports.
Which is one of the reasons that he's my favorite. And I think it's something that I know that all the three of you this weekend with the Newtown shootings, it's something that I mean, I tweeted one thing this weekend and then stepped away from Twitter. I found it to be a very difficult place to be. This was the first Saturday in a good 6-8 weeks that I haven't picked up a Gazette because I just didn't want to deal with it. I didn't go and look at the New York Times on Saturday because I didn't want to see the kids' names.
But you guys
all tackled it on your Twitter feeds this weekend, and I thought that was very admirable.
One of the things that I find that I always do is initially feel like I'm going to step back from something, but as a writer – or somebody that might put my own input there. And then I see enough that bothers me mm-hmm. that is accepted as truth that I can't remain quiet anymore. And I was doing pretty well being quiet about Newtown. And then it just kind of started to bother me, some of the deflections that people will say, some of the curveballs that end up being established as truth.
The now's not the time for politics?
No, not
stuff?
That one as much bothered me.
That was the one that got me.
Is it, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I just...
Now is like, the time for politics.
Now is... Yeah. When is it time?
Yeah, if not exactly. now, then
listen,
when?
Yeah. Listen.
Is it that 12 minutes between the time when it's not time because it's too soon?
Yeah, exactly.
And the
who,
5
who
minutes
determine,
that it's not even an issue because it's already in the past?
What time it is? Yeah. I mean, listen, you can put a whole bunch of cards and stuffed animals on the sidewalk, all this meaningless symbolism, all you want. There's a problem. There's a problem, and you have to tackle that problem. You have to tackle it now because it's not about... your prayers and your thoughts and all that meaningless garbage that you're giving. I understand everybody's upset, but there's a problem. And the only way that you're going to save lives in the future is if you attack that problem immediately. You have to start now while it's fresh in the minds of the people.
Absolutely. And the anger's the highest when people are going to do something.
That's right.
The thing that gets me is, and the reason that I got onto Twitter, and I even feel like talking about it right now quite a bit, is the curveballs that the gun lobby will throw to create an argument that loses the essential one. And on Twitter on the weekend, the one that was really getting me was everybody started talking about the fact that the violence in video games is the culprit.
Oh, come on.
And I saw a bit of that, and I saw you kind of get your backup about it at one point.
I did get my backup about that.
Was that with Bunny? That was Sean Farrell? I can't remember. It was somebody that
well, I don't think it was
a friend of the show that was talking about it.
I don't think
it's
it. It was one person in particular. But what gets me about it is, though violence in video games has a desensitizing process to it, and it probably does contribute, to start to make that the central focus or argument that the gun lobby would like us to start talking about,
mm-hmm. It's like
takes
blaming...
away completely from it, because the incidence of gun violence and mass suicides in the United States is 90% higher than in any other nation in the world. Mm-hmm. And all of those nations in the world have violent video games.
Of course.
Yeah. In Japan, like, the video games are apparently even more violent than
like,
they are
Brian,
in
it's
America.
It's like blaming the music. It's the way that Marilyn Manson was blamed for Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean...
That's true.
The Dawson shooter...
Mm-hmm.
If you look at his bio, it's all about the music that he listened to,
mm-hmm.
as if that's some sort of an excuse.
So, yes, video games can be desensitizing.
But it cannot.
But in Australia, before they instigated a ban on semi-automatics and fast-loading jackets, before they instituted a ban, they had 16 homicides and large-scale shootings, 16 of them before 1996, and they've had zero since.
Yeah.
Since they outlawed guns in Japan, they've had no incidents. And then Michael Moore put on a very interesting tweet on Saturday saying on Friday as well, there was a crazy who went off in China too, and he had only a knife, and he injured 22 people, and they're an undead.
Yeah.
Gun is the killer.
But you know what? I think that something happened Friday.
That will change things.
I think this is it. That's the final shot.
You know, because...
It felt like so. It when Obama
I sure
spoke.
Hope so.
Because, you know, the NRA has been silent, and mm-hmm. rightfully so, because whatever they would have said, even for their fans or their moderate fans, it would have been out of place.
Right.
I think that Friday, when Barack Obama took the stand in the White House... He was outstanding, and he was even stronger yesterday. Now it's time to go from words to something else. And because he's in his second mandate, I think he's going to be able to do that.
You know what shocks me about the whole debate is it never feels like there's the political will to do it. And I was under the impression that the numbers were very much in the favor of the NRA in terms of the Republicans and their base and the Tea Party and their base and the gun enthusiast and that base. But I heard the statistics yesterday. There are only 31 congressmen and 31 senators, which is massively in a minority, sure. who are pro-gun. So if the will of the actual politician who's been voted in is at 25%, what's the battle?
Yeah.
I don't even know what the battle is. Just get it done. Dianne Feinstein is going to bring it to the House. And when it gets brought to the House, I don't see why it should be so complicated.
The battle is in the essence of the Constitution. That's right. What it is. What people in the United States.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, Jay, but you don't have to, in this instance, appeal the Second Amendment.
Oh, no, I know that.
You
but...
just appeal portions of it, because when the Second Amendment was written, the most powerful weapon was the musket.
Yes, yes. Which took a minute to load.
Yeah, but that,
yeah. And there were five guys to beat the crap out of you while you were trying to get it ready.
It's got nothing to do. Yeah, it's got nothing. It's the problem is that the Constitution by Americans is regarded almost like the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
oh, yeah.
It's
more.
Amending it or taking, I mean, it's almost exactly the same thing. You get the Bible, And, you know, there are people out there who believe that the Earth is 6,000 years old because it's said in the Bible. Well, people, they have a tendency to look at the Constitution in the same way,
yep,
as if this was written by the hand of God and we cannot change it. And whatever is in here still applies 300 years later. You know?
Yeah, but Jay,
well,
you
that's
know
the
what?
Fight we're having
you
is
know,
the will of that, right?
You know what happened on Friday and for the last couple of days, I think, and I hope I'm right on this, is that common sense will prevail. And it needs to go, and because it's kids, because of the images of those 5 and 6 years old that were not even recognizable because of the nature of the injuries.
It's too bad that it came to this, though.
Yes,
but you know
I agree.
I think
but
Obama...
the strongest word of Obama last night was what? There was a lot of great lines that needs to go further than a one-liner. But when he said that, I hope that this nation will be worthy of your memory. For me, that was the testament.
That's
that
right.
Was
mine was, we can do better. Very simple. We can do better.
But they need
we need to change,
better.
He said as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
Something's got to give.
And you know,
is what he said.
And if you want to change something, you cannot go on the back of the NRA or on the head of the people that are fighting to arm rights and say you're wrong. You have to tell them, I have no problem with the law that gives you the right to bear arms.
But
find a way that if you're a hunter, that you have a rifle that is going to be used for hunting, and that in the corner of St. Catherine and Green Avenue, you don't need to have an AK-47.
No,
and you don't
and a
need,
hunter
nobody
doesn't even
in
need
this
a
world
repeat mechanism either. He doesn't want to obliterate the animal. He just wants the one buckshot in the deer so he can eat the deer, and there's something left of the deer.
So that's why I think that those strong images of those victims and what happened in the last couple of days will bring the debate to another level, and people
Let's
will find
so.
A way to get
Let's
some
so time
from the speech last night.
In the coming weeks, I'll use whatever power this office holds to engage my fellow citizens, from law enforcement to mental health professionals to parents and educators, in an effort aimed at preventing more tragedies like this. Because what choice do we have? We can't accept events like this as routine. Are we really prepared to say that we're powerless in the face of such carnage? That the politics are too hard? Are we prepared to say that such violence visited on our children year after year after year is somehow the price of our freedom?
Is there anything more heartbreaking than hearing that kid cry in the background?
Oh, pretty appropriate.
You know what? There was something more. For me, last night, when he started naming the victims, the kids,
goodness.
First name by first name, I thought that was brilliant. And you could hear in he was going slowly with all those names. I remember Noah. I remember Josephine. And you could hear some adults crying there.
Yeah.
And, of course, that town is devastated, and I don't know how they will be able to go through that. But that speech last night was so strong. And now that he is in his second mandate, that he doesn't need to care about getting
important.
Elected, he can go through the tough things. It's not going to be easy. But as he said, we need to do better. And not only there, we have to do it better here, too.
Of course.
Because, you know, if we think that it only happens in the States, I'm sorry, there were some people killed two blocks away from here,
yeah,
and 5 blocks at Polytechnique.
That's right.
And, of course, all those guys have stories, and it's not the guns that killed, it's them. But if they had something else in their hands at that point, they would not have done the rampage that they did. And that's why I think that those images of those kids, the carnage that President Obama talked about, those images are so strong that nobody can stay desensitized to what happened there. And I may be naive, because I am naive, and I'm still a big baby at 50 years old, but I feel this is the time. And we were talking about Bruce Arthur. Last night, he had some very strong tweets. And thank God for Twitter, because sometimes it can turn bad, and Friday was not a great day. But on other nights like last night, you can have people from the left, from the right, finding a way to get into the middle and say, let's try to find a way.
Yeah.
And it's not the left that is going to do it, and it's certainly not the right that's going to do it. If you don't get both sides together, it will not happen.
And I'm happy you mentioned that, because one of the things that's always happened is there's been these moments where you've just felt in your heart that there really couldn't be another side to the story, and yet you'll turn on Fox News, and somehow there's a side to the story that you just never thought could exist. But in the last 2 days, even Fox News, mm-hmm. as crazy as those mothers can be, have actually stepped aside from their typical Republican viewpoint and said, enough is enough on this.
Everybody toned it down over the weekend.
Everyone toned it down.
ESPNers were told not to tweet. Mm-hmm.
About sports.
I'm sure that this Dickey deal would have gone through on Friday, mm-hmm. because it turned out that the negotiations weren't really negotiations.
But they've only gone so far as saying on Fox that what should be abolished is the semi-automatics and the fast jackets. And
but that is progress.
That's a giant start, is how I was going to finish that.
Yeah.
It's a massive, massive start for that half of the world to realize that no one needs to fire 100 rounds in 1 minute.
Let's take a call, guys. 514-790-1690.
This could be dangerous.
1-866-896-2546.
This is live Twitter where I don't get to think.
Luckily, Jimmy does screen our calls thoroughly. And,
oh, good.
This is a regular, and I figured since we were talking about his country, we should bring him in to weigh in on it. Travis from Asheville, North Carolina. Good evening, Travis.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a really weird weekend and very unfortunate. And with my experience, you know, thinking about the legislative body of this country, I can promise you that there will be no gun control legislation passed this term.
Wow.
Why not?
However, well, because there may only be 30 senators and congressmen who are certified by the NRA, ILA, the Institute for Legislative Action, or the Gunners of America, which is another one of these super PAC groups, but they are a whole ton of the South, even the Democrats, even the supposed liberals, are beholden to these interests, because the NRA makes its money and keeps alive, preaching to its 10 million members who they're actually working for is the gun companies, the people who made the $4,000 or $3,000 off the guns that killed the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's who they're working for.
But the thing
is, they will lean on them. But there will be something done, because there is the executive order process from the president.
I just read today, though, that the NRA put millions upon millions of dollars into the last presidential campaign, and they only swung four ridings. They only swung four seats in their favor. Why do they have such power if they only have the power to swing four seats?
Francois?
Travis, if I may ask you this, because you have a better knowledge of your country than I will ever have, but if I agree with you that it will not happen on a blunt side, could everybody who are arguing that they have the right to bear arms would agree that they don't need to get an AK-47 or a semi-automatic rifle, and that they could have a private gun for their own safety, if they want to call it that way, and farmers could have, you know, a hunting rifle, because the raccoon is going to his garbage, which always makes sense. But put aside everything that does not make sense, the images of those of that rifle that was used to kill those 20 kids. I think that, and I may be wrong, and I hope I'm not, but explain me how anybody in the United States would not agree on the fact that there is a difference between a handgun that you use for your protection at home or a hunting rifle and an AK-47.
The difference is that there is a very small minority in this country, small but significant. You can see it through some of the particularly disturbing Tea Party groups that have had racist kind of things, or you see people who have been arrested. There is a minority of this country that believes that violence or the threat thereof has a place in politics. They say the ballot box or the bullet box. And there is a very significant minority that believes they would actually be able to carry out an armed rebellion against the biggest military in the world with smart bombs and UAVs and cruise missiles. And these people aren't very smart. But there is a very significant minority that thinks that, yeah, they should be able to own civilian versions of assault rifles.
Well, they are a minority, so the majority could win over this. It could be a national referendum. It could be there are some ways politically that you could relay to all the good common sense people from the left and the right that would agree that, you know, automatic rifle don't need to be in free circulation. There are rules in your country and here with toys that you don't want to give to a kid that is 3 years old or below 5 years old, and you have to use a paint that is different to make sure that everybody's going to be safe. But you can buy an automatic rifle with absolutely no questions asked, or not even enough questions asked.
Open a bank account and get one.
Yeah.
It's like Jay was saying, there are people, not more than just that minority that are kind of nuts. There are people that believe that the Constitution is sacred, and people who die as a result of this strict interpretation of this 200-year-old document, that's more important. The document's more important than the kids.
Travis, that was the same rationale for slavery, though, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, the particular institution. This is just the modern-day version of the particular institution.
Yeah, but we got rid of it. It took a while. It took too long, but it's over.
So, Travis, you...
executive action.
So, Travis, you honestly believe that if this came to a House vote, and it wasn't the appeal of the Second Amendment, but just an amendment to that said an abolishment of semi-automatics and fast-loading jackets, that wouldn't pass?
I think that restriction of semi-automatics wouldn't pass. I think that magazine sizes wouldn't pass.
Wow.
What has to be done in the country
What is the population's... thinking that they need that to not pass?
It's honestly, I think a lot of it is just bullheadedness against any kind of government intrusion. And the only way that this is going to get done is an executive order by the president, modifications on existing laws. There's something in the books now called, I don't want to get too technical, but it's called 922R, which is a restriction on parts. So if you buy a foreign semi-automatic weapon, it has to have a certain number of Americanized parts or it's illegal. And there can be modifications with executive orders, and those will obviously be – there will be lawsuits against the government. People who are arrested on those, they'll be taken to the Supreme Court. And if one or two more justices leave the Supreme Court, Obama can appoint them before he leaves, then the executive orders will be upheld, and it will stay. That's basically it.
Scary stuff, Travis. Thank you so much for the call. And
great call.
And while you're here, thanks so much for all your calls and contributions to the show this year. We've really appreciated it.
Hi, it's joy listening every week, man.
Good
Cheers.
Stuff.
And also, I love North Carolina.
Yeah, home for his paradise. Sorry about this, guys. I needed to do this.
Francois, you're going to, you know.
Raleigh is really, I love Raleigh.
Yeah, you love Raleigh?
I do.
Big Raleigh fan?
I am.
You know, I hope, I understand what Travis is saying.
Brunswick Tobacco Road guy.
No, it's a new one. It's a Research Triangle now.
But to show you how things were different the last couple of days because of all this. On Friday, you know, I'm a little bit addicted to Twitter. And
I have no clue.
Yeah, I have no clue.
Jeez,
follow
Jay,
him at Gagnon Francois, by the way.
So, I try to answer as many times as I can to people who are asking questions about things. And at one point, it was like for an hour, I was scotched to my TV and I was, you know, I was very emotional about what was I was learning minute by minute over what happened in Newtown. And at one point, I just tweeted, sorry, guys, I will not answer hockey questions today. And I start tweeting about what was happening and how I felt for the parents that were in that fire hall waiting for their kids to come, which would never come. And, you know, reactions were instantly, you know, we don't care about sports today.
Right.
And I on my tweet deck, I have my friends, I have the people that I follow, and I have the NHL.
And the Wild page.
And, well, the Wild page is on my friend's page, and Kaufman's all there also, and all the people here at the team. So, you know, there were some tweets coming in from, because that was the big day with the voting for the players
right.
and the countersuit. And every time some of our colleagues were putting on Twitter, you know, a brief of information over what was going on to the NHL, instantly you would have 15 messages coming. We don't care. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how strong that event on Friday was. And I sure hope, as Obama said, and I will repeat again, that the memory of those people, that country will be worthy of the memory of those people, and they will react accordingly.
There is there's something else that, I mean, it's all good to talk about gun control and so on, but one of the other things that really pissed me off on Twitter was when everybody was talking about, well, don't say the gunman's name. We don't want to know anything about him. Don't give him the exposure. Don't give him the media. First of all, he's dead. Second of all,
I don't think the exposure is going to matter much.
It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, because the one thing that people are not addressing is the issue of mental illness and the events that have led up to. I mean, if he didn't have the gun, the assault weapon, obviously an assault weapon can do more damage in a less amount of time to more people. What if it was a pipe bomb or the guy in China with the knife? You know, we have to address the whole issue of mental illness. I come from a family where it was an issue, and if you can identify the warning signs and see what's wrong, there is nothing wrong with some scientific research, letting people know exactly what's going on so that you can prevent this kind of thing of happening again. Because if it's not going to be an assault weapon, it's going to be some other form of
violence. How about making it socially acceptable? Because that's one of the biggest issues.
Well, that's also, it's very taboo. It's taboo. And
you're not allowed to be manic depressive in this world.
And it's a question of dismissal as well.
Exactly. You're looked down upon.
Well, you're nuts.
You're crazy.
Yeah, you're nuts. You know what, though? Just step over the guy on the sidewalk.
You're absolutely right what you're saying. But again, I go back to my original argument, and one of the things that bothered me that I actually ended up tweeting about the most is every one of these mass shootings has a personality to it.
Right.
That revolves around the background of the shooter. You mentioned the Marilyn Manson from Columbine. Mm-hmm. This is the Asperger's from Newtown.
Right.
Every one of them has a personality. And so you can get locked up in that a little bit. And you can get locked up in the fact that he loved video games, one of them. Or one was at a Batman movie. And you can get all locked up in all of those because they all carry individual characteristics. But what do all of them have in common?
Young men.
Oh, we could get to that, but I was going to answer fast loading, powerful, semi-automatic jackets that can reload. They all have that in common.
But
all of them. But you know what? You've made a great point, and it's one that nobody at this table wants to hear because all five of us have something in common. We're white males. But you know what? They're all white males, everybody. Mm-hmm. Just about all of them. When is the last time an estrogen-laced woman did this?
Yeah, but
Lizzie Borden.
Lizzie Borden. That's a long, long time ago. And sure, yeah, you're going to find moments where a woman goes crazy. And you know what? It's a white man, too. 95 times out of 100, it's a white man.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that has to do with the fact that, generally speaking, the white man is richer. And the white man probably has the means to get the guns. And I don't know if there's a personality trait behind it, the white man. But I do know there's a trait behind the man.
There's a trait behind the man. I don't care about the color, because Belcher a couple of weeks ago was a madman because he was jealous or because something was going on. I think that the explanation of what's going on
No, I'm just giving
–
you know what, Francois? No, but, don't get me wrong here, and I don't want to get myself in a pickle. I don't want to get myself in a pickle here.
Yeah, that's right.
All I'm saying is that's the stat.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
I agree.
I'm not telling you that I understand the psychology behind it. I'm just Brian Wilde.
But the other reason why
But
the other reason why, Brian, I think this one is different is that if you take Columbine, you have teenagers that were mad about the world, and we all know that teenagers sometimes get mad about
everything. They were bullied.
Everything.
They were
right.
Yeah.
You go to a Virginia Tech. You have an Asian student. That was involved there, and he had a beef against people. You have Valérie Fabricant here that felt that he was stolen his ideas by some colleagues.
That's right.
There's some explanation. Nobody will find a way to explain what those poor kids of 5 and 6 years old had done to this guy.
Not a chance.
There's no explanation.
Well, that's a good point.
No, there's nothing.
In this case, for sure.
In this case,
was the teacher.
And that's right.
But then that turned out to not be true.
It turned out not to be true. So when everything's going to be calmer around here and that we will find a way to get some sort of a reason for what this happened, there will be no explanation to say why were those kids the victims? You know, there's some explanation on all the other things. Mark Lippin was an idiot that felt that women were taking too much space in the society. You have an answer there. It's a bad answer and it's a bad message, but at least we can find a way to teach our kids not to think that way.
Right.
But
what the hell did a 5-year-old kid do
exactly
to this guy?
So that's why I think that because of the nature and the age of the victims and the fact that they were
defenseless.
Exactly. It will bring this debate to another level.
I think
And that's why I think we're going to win. And
right.
I say
and,
we as a society.
But it, but the bottom line start to it is before you can turn it into zero, you got to get the numbers down. And that almost sounds callous. But,
no, but it's true.
But before you can turn it into a flat-out zero where the guy doesn't have a gun and it's a knife and everyone gets the care they need like in China last Friday.
You mean when there aren't 300 shootings a day in the United States?
Exactly. Before you can get it to zero, you have to get it to one and two and three. And you get it to one and two and three because all the guy's got is a six-shooter handgun.
Yeah. Right away. Right away.
Right away. Now you're at one.
As soon as you ban that assault weapon,
exactly.
Boom, you cut it in half right away.
Massively.
Except
massively.
That,
and so it sounds callous to say it, but get the fast gun out of the way.
Yeah.
Then we'll worry about the slow gun after that. But take
and
it piecemeal because you're never going to stop Alabama from doing it from 100 to zero.
But even if they are banned, does that not stop somebody who wants it to get it on the black market to find it somewhere? I mean, if
it's
you want to commit
tougher.
Sure, but Francois,
well,
if you,
you
want to commit
let
a crime,
let me answer
then who
that
cares
for
if
you.
The gun's illegal?
Let me answer that for you. Could you find a black market? Of course you could, but let's go to Japan. They banned guns. They haven't had an incident. Let's go to Australia. 1996, they banned that type. They haven't had an incident. Sure, they've had killing. Sure, they've had a husband upset with a wife. Boom. A wife
upset with a husband.
Didn't deserve anything like that.
Yeah.
But mass, they had 16 prior from 68 to 96. And
well,
then
England,
zero.
Too, right? They have the Dunblane Massacre, which was featured. There was a documentary on NBC this summer before the Wimbledon final about mm-hmm. the Dunblane Massacre.
And Andy Murray.
Andy Murray mm-hmm. was a student at this elementary yeah. school in Scotland that I think a dozen kids were killed at. And because of that, the United Kingdom banned weapons. I mean,
start
full
with
out
that,
across the board.
Start with that and then work on getting the numbers down.
You know, because if it's illegal, if you're not used to see somebody carrying a semi-automatic rifle and you see somebody going to the shopping mall with one, you're going to dial 911.
Yeah.
Because you will have a reaction.
That's
the
a good
worst,
point.
The worst thing that happened on Friday, my first initial reaction was, what, another shooting? And then you were waiting to see how bad was this one because there's so many. And today I was watching, this morning I was watching CNN in my office. And there were a lot of talk about Newtown and what was going on today and the day after the visit of Obama. And on the scroll going down the screen, something happened. Two police officers shot somewhere. And I said, wow, how about some irony here? And the real world is getting back. And that's, I think that's the reason why if we want to get something going, we need to put more emphasis on all those killings.
Yeah.
And that everybody would know that there's a lot more than 20 victims, you know, in a week. And that thing on Friday was horrible. But we need to use it as a guidance.
Stepping stone.
Yeah, in French we say a lighthouse.
Yeah.
That you have you have it there and you say, let's never forget this. Let's remember this, but let's add to it all the others.
And I'll tell you, that's actually something that I've been noticing. There were a few days before the Newtown tragedy, there was a shooting at a mall in Oregon.
That's right.
Called the Clackamas Town mm-hmm. Mall. One of our correspondents on the show works at a store in that mall. His name is Benjamin Christensen. He was in the MLB wow. fan cave, and he's back home in Oregon now. And he worked at the mall, and he was there that day, live tweeting from inside the mall, locked the store down. If you go to his website, I'm sure you can find it. His Twitter handle is Shaka Brody. But he was talking about that, and he was wondering, one of the things that he's going through, and obviously you witness a shooting, you go through a lot in the after effects, why are so many more people talking about Connecticut than they are about this? It's as if it never happened. And I mean, obviously, yes, it's this, I mean, it's children died, that's that's a big part of it. But, you know, the mall thing,
I think that
happens.
You know,
and frankly, you know what? It happened here. It happened in Toronto at the Eaton Center this
true.
Summer.
Yeah.
Brett Laurie was the first person to tweet about it, the baseball player.
But what you brought up is an interesting point in terms of the desensitization of even the minor ones now. There's in Oregon, and it's...
Yeah, only four or
it's
five were
basically,
killed, right?
Basically, Dave, I can tell you, I feel like I have to research my memory banks to even remember the moment.
Yeah, it's a battle of statistics. Now.
Exactly.
You know, only four, that's nothing.
Exactly.
And the further way that it happens.
Should stand out, Jay, like it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. The further way it happens.
Not that happened, just four.
No, because if that happened two blocks away at Alexis Neon, or if that happened at Rockland, or at Place Vertu, or at Distrant, we'd be losing our minds right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when Jane Kreba was killed on Yonge Street in front of the Eaton Center on Boxing Day a few years ago, that created a panic. The same way that there was a panic in the city of Toronto last year after the Danzig shootings in the summer and the mall, which happened, I think, a week before. We're lucky in this town that usually when someone gets shot, it's a mob hit. And I don't know if that's a thing that the media propagates, like that settling of accounts, the thing that you hear sometimes. But it allows this city to feel safe. And I don't think we realize how lucky we are that, I mean, and again, you know, two blocks away, and I stood there working for City TV the day of the Dawson shootings. And it was tough. It was tough watching every kid walked out of there white as a sheet. And
but generally speaking, we're
one person, poor
so
Anastasia D'Souza. And I mean, several people were shot. But what if Kim Vergil had been a good shot?
Yeah.
Then we would have had our tragedy as well. And then all that conversation about the Second Amendment goes right out the window. Because here we consider ourselves very stringent. You know,
what
long
if he
gun,
had a Bushmaster?
If he'd had a Bushmaster,
yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what, Jay? When I think about rifles, I picture somebody hunting. I picture Old Yeller and you know, off with the rifle.
Yeah.
I don't picture something that's straight out of 24. And that scares me. But again, and I don't, to all of our American listeners, I don't want you guys to think that we're sitting on our high horse
no,
here.
Oh, no, not at all.
We know that we have the same problems. Just you guys are louder.
And it's society.
Well, and
thing.
They have 10 times the population,
exactly.
Too. So they're always the numbers are going to
of
be.
Course.
But percentage-wise, the numbers are still out of whack.
You know, if we would have the same conversation over how many Americans
320 murders,
on the
I think it was in
there.
Detroit, and 1 mile away, Windsor, it was zero.
Exactly.
That's
so.
Right. I mean, those numbers are staggering. But again, going back to the speech of Barack Obama last night when he said, we cannot consider this as routine. At the point where you start thinking about it as routine, you're done. You need to be there. Those kind of news should be brought up, and they should hurt everybody the way Newtown hurt. Because if you get desensitized over what's happening over there, we are losing the battle. You need to have an outrage when you see two guys were killed by a gunshot. Or worse, you know, somebody dropped a gun in the, you know, in an accident. And why was he carrying a gun in the shopping mall? I mean, those things are, you know, you cannot get used to that, because if you get used to that, you're losing the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting used to losing.
You know, guys, we talked before about the things that we do to keep ourselves busy during this lockout, and
yep.
You mentioned the responsibility of being able to cover things on a local angle. I hope that continues, and I hope that we can continue to have these debates about important things. I think it's necessary, and shouldn't just be the pleasure of people on other radio stations. We could have sat here for an hour and a half talking about a 2-2 tie between Montreal and Columbus tonight, and if this is the casualty of the lockout, then I'm okay with that. And
exactly what I meant.
I really appreciate this.
I consider myself blessed to have a voice. I consider myself more blessed to have a voice that people choose to listen to.
Hmm. Amen.
That's
Brian
great.
Wilde and Francois Gagnon, this has been great, guys.
That's why I'm so proud of working with this guy.
And you.
Well, you normally get 2 minutes a shot on a Saturday night, so we just did an hour and a half, and I think you filled your quota for the year.
It went by like a 2 minute.
Yeah, but
it's
late
does.
In the year, Dave.
You know, make me a promise when they cancel the season officially. You guys will come back in.
Of
we'll
course,
do this again.
Anytime.
We'll have a nice late night.
And we'll come back even though the season goes back.
You give Francois a Coke,
yeah,
and
I'll
he
be
can
here.
Go forever.
He'll give you a smile.
Of course.
Follow Francois on Twitter at GagnonFrancois. Follow Brian at BWildCTV. Don't worry, I know your Twitter handle.
I knew you did.
Thanks, guys. That was good stuff.
Thank you
Thanks,
very much.
Dave. Thanks,
Happy
Jay.
Holidays to all of you.
This is The Kaufman Show, and we'll be back.
Suicide.
Titus Andronicus, A More Perfect Union. Our thanks to Francois and Brian. We'll be back with Bruce Arthur. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you. Let's bring in Bruce Arthur from the National Post. Welcome back to the show, sir.
My pleasure, Dave.
How are you?
Well, the kids are all sick, but I'm not yet, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, hopefully you can stave it off and, I don't know, maybe for once in our lives, listen to Don Cherry and take some cold effects. Great times in Toronto right now. My goodness. Now, I know you spoke with Alex Anthopoulos tonight on TSN Toronto. This is really out of nowhere. I mean, up until last week, nobody saw the Jays making another huge move.
Yeah, I thought that they were going to add another arm and another bat. It was kind of my feeling. I wasn't as sure about the bat, but I knew that Alex Anthopoulos was still looking, because at this point, what he's done, it's really amazing, actually. And the fact that you would even say that it's good times in Toronto involving sports is an amazing change. But what he's done is he's really transformed this team, and he's going for it. He added $165 million in committed payroll when he made the Marlins deal. Then he signed Melky Cabrera for 2 years and $16 million. And so what he's done is he's become a high payroll team. And if you're going to go and try to win this division, which is what he's going to try to do, something the Jays haven't done since 1993, then you'd better be sure that you've exhausted all the avenues. And he's been kind of chasing R.A. Dickey for a while. He started chasing him before the winter meetings. He had a feeling the Mets weren't going to sign him. And finally, he paid the price in prospects to go get him. And I really think in doing so, this is now, if not the best rotation in the American League, is something close. Detroit might be the only other one I'd put in that conversation. And I think what the Jays have done is they've sacrificed future for the present, because for the first time in an awful long time in Toronto, the present really is something worth pursuing, and it's something that is what this Blue Jays team is all about. We're not waiting for prospects. We're not waiting for the crop to come in. We are seeing a contender being built in front of our eyes.
Now, by present, you mean, I would imagine, at least a four-year window, right?
3 to 4, I think. And that's why the R.A. Dickey deal actually makes a lot of sense to me. Because, yeah, you say he's 38, but he's a knuckleballer. We all know knuckleballers. If you look at the numbers after age 38 for the most prominent knuckleballers of the last 40 years, they've all got life left, because it's just not a pitch that destroys arms.
Right.
So they've got everyone but Josh Johnson. This is one of the starters they acquired from Miami, one of the two, under contract for at least 2 years. Of the core guys that they really want, this is a controllable core. And the R.A. Dickey deal, if he is anything like he was last year when they won the National League Cy Young, they've got him for next year at $5 million. They've got 2 years after that at $12 million, just over $12 million apiece. And then a team option for $12 million in 2016. So you've got 4 years of R.A. Dickey, and you've got Jose Bautista in his prime. You've got Edwin Encarnacion pretty close to in his prime. They think these are two 30 to 40 home run guys, which in baseball are pretty rare commodities.
Sure.
They have got a starting staff that, even if Josh Johnson leaves after a year, is still pretty deep. I mean, Ricky Romero is probably going to be the fifth starter on this team, when 2 years ago he was the ace of the staff. He's built something, and you never know how it's going to go. You never know how these things go. But what we used to do with the Jays, we used to talk about, if everything goes right, if, then maybe they'll play games that matter. In this case now, so many more things have to break the wrong way for them not to be good. Unless everyone goes south at once. Alex Anthopoulos has built a team full of major league players who you can depend on. Even if you lose one or two, there's still enough guys, maybe, to carry the load.
I'll stand by my statement off the top. Good times for sports in Toronto.
And, yeah, it really
I mean,
is.
Raptors notwithstanding and hockey. I mean, you know, honestly, I wanted to talk hockey with you. There's nothing going on. There's nothing worth talking about.
There really isn't. And, I mean, the hockey in Toronto thing really, I think it's just saving the city from unnecessary unhappiness. That's all the Leafs do anyway. But yeah, in terms of the lockout, now we wait. We wait through Christmas and we see. I still say it's going to take an act of insanity, but I think one thing with this lockout, one thing with every lockout, eventually it sucks the soul out of anyone who talks about it. You just, yeah. Even if you're interested, you can't stay interested forever.
Yeah, it's true. And the parade of pundits that come through this station, all the TSN guys, they sound like they just don't care anymore.
Speaking as journalists, it's just not fun to cover, because what you're covering is two sides using every possible mechanism to get as rich as they can. And it's just, it's not a terribly inspiring thing. It's not why any of us got into sports, you know, is to cover collective bargaining.
Right.
And I mean, I still believe the owners are greedier than the players when it really comes down to that, but there's no good guys in this. There's nothing really that fun to write about. And one thing you will notice, though, is that even hockey guys are getting to branch out and write about other things. We're all talking about other things. I like to think that as a nation, we are spending time with our families, we are going for walks, we're developing hobbies, we're becoming more well-rounded people. That's my best-case scenario.
I agree, and I think that that's something that needs to be driven home more and more and more so that people realize that this is an unnecessary distraction in so many people's lives.
Well, I mean, hockey's a great thing, it's a great sport, but there are others. There are other great things in the world, and we as a nation probably focus on it to the exclusion of some other really worthwhile things. And I like to think the lockout, the NHL is almost doing us a favor. Every 7 years, they remind us, you can live without hockey. It's okay.
What are your favorite stories, or what do you think were the most important stories of the year? Because they're probably not the same.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think everything that's happening in the NFL in terms of its existential crisis with concussions is a really big one. I mean, I was talking with Sean Fitzgerald at the Post today, who's my colleague, and he's writing a year-end football story. And we started going over all the things that happened this year in football. Junior Seau killed himself, and so many more players joined concussion lawsuits against the NFL. And you just had the Javon Belcher murder-suicide, and there's all these things about football that you have to go a long ways down the list of bad things that happened to football this year to even get to something like a game being wrongly decided on national television. You have to go a long way down the list to find Bountygate.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big deal. I think Lance Armstrong's a pretty big one. I really do. And I think the Olympics, obviously, the Olympics is a huge deal every year. But I'd have to really sit down and think of stories that really carried this year, and I haven't had a chance to do that yet.
Oh, I imagine you'll be writing something about that in the next couple of weeks.
I will, yes. There's a lot of that this time of year.
I mean, even before the Jays signing, I thought that the Dickey story was a wonderful story about redemption for baseball this season.
Absolutely. I mean, he's almost a movie character at this point. He looks like he was cast, you know? He's got that beautiful hangdog face. But the story in Sports Illustrated about him right now, about the childhood sexual abuse that he suffered and that he has fought his entire life and that he seems to have escaped to find a certain measure of peace, is a really remarkable story. His baseball story alone, even if he'd never had personal adversity like he's had, is unbelievable. The fact that this guy unlocked this magic pitch this late in his life, at age 35, he becomes a full-time starter in the major leagues. That's almost unheard of. And the fact that he also throws a pitch that has probably never been thrown in the history of Major League Baseball, which is a knuckleball that travels between 75 and 80 miles an hour.
Right.
As a pitcher, he's fascinating. As a person, he's fascinating. He's erudite. He's interesting. He's reflective. He's self-aware. He's everything you'd almost want from kind of a warrior poet athlete. And, I mean, as a journalist, I'm excited just to see this kind of, just to meet him and talk to him and see what he's like. But it's fascinating to me because he's become a walking story. And he completely deserves it. But I wonder what that's like to be someone whose backstory is so, it's such a compelling life that he's led. But it's also one that's going to attract so much attention when it comes to Toronto, because we've never seen an athlete like this in any way.
Yeah, this is what that was actually going to be my follow-up question. I'm wondering if there's, even on the Canadian landscape, who would measure up to that?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. That's a really good question. I mean, I've talked to a lot of really interesting and smart and funny and compelling athletes in my life, but geez, I don't think
as far as quotable, I think Bill Lee would be one of those guys.
Yeah, Bill Lee is a fascinating
but the backstory doesn't have any of the tragedy in it. And
yeah, that's the thing is that, you know, I guess that's kind of a shallow litmus test, but you go, wow, could I make a movie about this guy's life? And R.A. Dickey is five different kinds of movies. It's almost too cinematic, his life. Again, just the baseball aspect is unbelievable. And then you get into to everything else that he has overcome. His memoir was incredibly well received. He really is a singular figure in baseball. And I should add, he's a really, really good pitcher.
Cy Young Award and all, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, is that this just doesn't happen. This is, movie scripts don't tend to play out in real life. And in this case, in this one case, they seem to have done so.
So do you think that Daniel Day-Lewis can throw a curve, a knuckleball?
You know, I don't know if Daniel Day-Lewis is the guy. I don't think he has quite that. It's the face you want to get. You want to get that, those kind of sad eyes and that everyman beard and all of that. I'm trying to think. I'm sure if I was given a little bit of time, I could come up with someone who would be perfect for this role. Knowing Hollywood, oh God, it'd probably be someone like.
Since we're pre-taping.
Kevin James? Is that? I'll bet you they'd use Kevin James.
Oh, and suddenly it's Tyler Perry's R.A. Dickey, right?
Exactly. It would just be a disaster.
I like the idea of Daniel Day-Lewis doing it better. Bruce, I want to thank you so much for your time this year and for all your great writing and tweeting. Really, you're a wonderful follow on Twitter, and I look forward to all of your articles.
Thank you. It is far too kind, Dave. My pleasure.
All the best, and hope the kids feel better for Christmas.
Yeah, me too.
Take care.
You too.
Our thanks to Bruce Arthur, one of the best in the business. I'm happy with him as our final guest of 2012, Jay.
That's it? That's the last one, huh?
That's the last guest of the year.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too. That's not too shabby.
Not too shabby.
And, he was preceded by Francois Gagnon and Brian Wilde. So, hey, we got them all today, man. We got them all.
We'll come back and we'll take your calls if you guys feel like calling in, and we'll do a little rundown of the last year on the Kaufman Show. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
All right, stay tuned. We'll be back.
Hi, my name's Paul Langlois. I play with the Tragically Hip, and you're listening to The Kaufman Show.
Thank you.
She had an apartment where the property was cheap. She said, I save lots of money, but I lose lots of sleep in my apartment where the property's so cheap. That is the Hip. Highway Girl. Reaching way back. And here we are, one last segment on our last show of the year. Phone lines are surprisingly full for the late hour that it is, Mr. Farrar.
Surprisingly? Come on. This is great radio. How is it surprising?
Only because of the hour, my friend.
Give yourself some credit.
Yeah, it's been a good one tonight.
Stop being so humble.
It's been a great year. And I feel like every week we've gotten to speak to people that I really admire and greatly respect. And it's just been so much fun. And we'll continue to get a little bit cheesy in the next 20 minutes. But I do want to take these calls Let's start with Mike in St. Leonard. Thanks so much for holding, Mike. How are you?
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good evening.
Jay's absolutely right. Give yourself some credit. Great year and, of course, a great show this evening. Really thoughtful insight on a very difficult subject. I don't think we understand the scope of it, and I'm coming to terms with trying to understand that country in terms of what it's about. To say one thing, but their actions never really back it up. You know, there's 96 guns for every 100 people in that country that are legally registered, almost 300 million guns legally registered. And so the challenge isn't so much getting something passed. The challenge is it's a cultural thing.
Well, that's the thing with America, though, right? It's what it is vis-a-vis what America aspires to be.
Exactly.
And you know, we can look at it from the newsroom aspect or the West Wing aspect of this idyllic version of the shining city upon a hill, that Winthropian version of America. We know that it's not true.
No,
we know that it's
not.
Way closer to being the crucible of the modern world, but it doesn't mean we can't uphold those ideals.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with you know, hoping for something. And that was, I thought that Francois' tone on that was the best. The vision of hoping for a more perfect union one day.
It's true, but, you know, at some point in time, the reality hits you that the barn door has been open for a long time. You know, when I think of, they spoke about the mother this evening on CNN. She's an ex-stockbroker who made a great living, and to think that her hobby would be going and buying guns and going to shooting range. As a Canadian, as a Montrealer my whole life, you know, I've never come across a guy, never mind a mother, who would ever think of that as being a hobby.
It exists. It's here. There are gun ranges in Montreal.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not the same thing. And it's not someone I've known. But in the United States with 96 guns for every 100 people, Dave, I got to believe it's more common.
How far off are we from those numbers?
We're probably quite far off.
But, I mean, don't forget, though.
Actually,
rural
we have more guns per capita.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Than the United States does, statistically.
Because I know
people, I don't know the numbers, but I know we do.
But Jay, I know people that live up in the country that have 20, 30 guns.
Yeah.
They use them for hunting.
They use them for hunting.
They're
yes.
lawful. They're
exactly.
legal.
Yeah, and a lot of, there's a trend now going to bow and arrow or crossbows instead of guns because, you know, give the animal a chance. And when you do kill the animal, well, you consume the animal. You use every part
yeah.
of it, you know. So there is a trend going on that is a bit of a thing that's happening these days. And they seem to be progressing more and more to that kind of idealism.
And the other point that I want to make before I let you guys go, the reason why I don't think any law will pass is this. Obama last night made one mistake, and his mistake was, I think you even had it on your show when you're quoting him, where he says that he's going to sit down and he's going to speak to lawmakers and this and that. The one thing that Bush did after 9/11 and passing the Patriot Act was that he had that on the books. It mm-hmm. was ready to go, and he took advantage of a situation, and Congress was too afraid. The Democrats were too afraid to reject it. If he had something on the books tonight that he could pass and go through to Congress, there's no way on earth the Republicans would have the shame that they would have in not passing any legislation, but it would have had to have been ready. His problem is, as much as I like that guy, he likes to sit down. He's a thinker, and sometimes you need a dumb Texan who's a doer who will push his agenda through no matter what. Instead of sitting down with everyone and talking to everyone, this is his opportunity to go and go to Congress and get them to do it. And unless that stuff was on the books already and he had it prepared to do it, he will not get what he needs to get passed. The NRA is an unbelievably strong organization. And even though they're quiet now, they will not be quiet forever. And I've seen some of their loons on TV as it is already. And these guys are actually advocating for more guns. They said, well, you know what? If one of the civilians or the teachers had a gun, they could have stopped
it. Yeah, but every fact... You know, every study and every fact proves that wrong. It's the same way. If you have a gun in your house, there's way more of a chance of somebody getting shot than if there isn't a gun.
Yeah,
in your
people
house.
Have to realize that they're not Jason Bourne.
Exactly.
You know, you are not James Bond.
Right.
You're not going to go out there.
But they don't, Jay. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They don't realize that.
No, they really think they're some sort of secret agent. They'll be able to take down a guy with an assault weapon who really has far less to lose than you do.
Exactly.
You know?
It's sort of like, and the equivalent, the 9/11 equivalent to this would be the air marshal.
Yeah.
Which was something that was, I mean... Again, completely blown out of proportion, I would say.
Yeah, it was. But you know what? It's a difficult time. I'm going to sit back, and I'm hopeful, too. but I'm also a realist, and I understand how the American political system works, and I've done a lot of research in the past about the NRA, because as the president rightly pointed out, this is the fourth time, so we're averaging once a year. He's going to have to give one of these speeches and go console families. And you know what? Within a month from now, are we going to remember this? Maybe a bit more because kids were involved and people are a little bit more ashamed of their stance for being supporters of the NRA right now. And I looked at some of the numbers, and about 50 to 59% don't mind having a little bit more legislation passed. But you know what? That leaves 40%, 45% of people who are part of that organization who are like, nope, it's okay. You know, that's the price of freedom, and they won't stop with that freedom. And as you've mentioned before, Jay, which is brilliant, Bill Maher said it. He said they believe that their, you know, the Constitution was delivered by Jesus himself.
That's right. It's the gospel. It's the will and the way, and it cannot be changed.
Ordained by God.
The thing's 200 years old. It's nonsense.
It is nonsense.
You can't touch that, you know? But anyways, guys, great year. Great show as always this evening. My best to you and your families for the upcoming season. Give us a chance to relax a bit, and hopefully no more of these kind of tragedies. It's a killer.
All the best to you and yours, Mike, and thank you for bringing it week in, week out. Your calls have been fantastic.
Thanks,
really,
Mike.
Appreciate it.
Have a good evening, guys.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks.
Let's go to Conrad, live on the Kaufman Show on TSN 690. Good evening, sir.
How are you, my friend?
Very good. How are you?
Not too bad. I want to wish you season's greetings.
Yes, and to you and yours.
And a good rest, and then a good show like always next year.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, Mike said a couple of things that I was going to say, but I just wanted to add to it.
Sure.
First of all, number one, more people are saying on the phone, on television, time and time again, not guns that kill people, it's people that kill people.
Yeah,
you keep hearing that. You keep hearing the same thing. If they'd only had guns, this would never have happened. If they really believe in the Bible says thou shalt not kill. And unfortunately, the two things are in contradiction with each other. When this thing was passed, it was so they would have arms to protect themselves against the British, not to protect themselves against kids in school.
And not just the British, but like tyrants coming in and taking over your country.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Well, what I did see, first two things. Number one, how many people right now, according to what they say on CNN, are rushing to buy guns because they're afraid they're going to not be able to buy them in the future? There's bigger sales right now in the various shows and the various places than they've had in years.
Never thought about that. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's going on. They were announcing it today. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Come on down to Walmart.
Yeah, the point very simply. Diane Feinstein said, "I have a bill right now which I'm presenting to Congress. Those who have their guns, they'll be able to keep them." And it just struck me, my God. You know how many guns are still going to be left? I just don't understand the American psychology.
No, it's difficult to comprehend. We don't have a document that's held the way that that's revered the way that they revere their document. Our document that holds even maybe the smallest of candles to that would be the Charter, which is 1982, 81. I mean, you're talking about something from 1776 now, and it has this mythical status, right? It's that America, I mean, there is a certain belief system in the United States, and again, I don't want to speak for everybody, but there are certain Americans that genuinely believe that America is a, what am I looking for here, Jay? Like a religious kind of haven.
A Christian nation.
Thank you.
Yeah, the guys who are shooting and killing people I believe they never even read the Charter.
I think that the people who are shooting and killing each other, or doing the shootings and the killings, Conrad, are the people that need help, and people are missing the signs on them, and that to me is one of the scariest things. It's that, do you think this kid's mom, who was the first victim, had any clue what was coming up? Do you think she would have left guns in her house if she knew that this was going to happen?
Absolutely.
Do you think maybe she wasn't as involved as she could have been? I don't know. But you've got to figure this doesn't come out of absolutely
problem.
This can't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, but the biggest problem that we have with medical problems is we often don't know who's mentally ill.
Of course
until
not.
Until it's too late.
That's right. But talk to your children. Sit down and have dinner with your kids. Ask them what's going on in their world. And I mean, you know what? He was 20.
But I would
that's still an age where you can where people can reach out to you if you need help.
By the same token, one of the radio announcers on CNN, one lady says, I had two kids, and I wanted to sit down with them today. They're 5 and 7. And to tell them what had taken place, and Lord, let her discuss it with them. She says they weren't interested. They wanted to watch television.
Yeah. Well, that's not a surprise to me, Conrad. I want to thank you so much for the call, Conrad. We really appreciate you staying up late and listening to us.
I tell you what, I wouldn't stay up. I'll miss a Monday night without you. Have a good one.
Aw, thanks so much, Conrad. We'll be back on the 7th of January.
Look forward.
All the best. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. I just wished Conrad Shatner in Côte Saint-Luc a Merry Christmas. Yes, I did.
Conrad Shatner.
In Côte Saint-Luc.
Well,
a Merry Christmas.
Okay.
All right, let's bring in Andrew in Montebello, who I think I can wish a Happy Hanukkah to, or is it Kwanzaa?
Happy Holidays.
There you go. There's the PC answer.
There you go.
How are you, Chef?
I'm doing well. This is it's gut-wrenching radio again.
Well, thanks for listening.
No, seriously, no. It has to be listened to. It's just so unfortunate. It's just at this time of night. It's not for me, but I mean for everybody else who actually should hear some sensible, common sense kind of things that are going on in the world.
Well, feel free to tell all those people during the day that they can call our bosses or bang down their doors or listen to the show on a podcast at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com.
Well, there you go. I actually wanted to thank your boss for actually giving you guys the time of day. Well, no matter what time of day it is, you guys have quite a window to get your thoughts out. I want to congratulate you guys on a great year, and I want to turn this on to something maybe a little later because this is just it's just too much. I just wanted to thank you guys. It's been a great year. You made a guy, a 40-something-year-old guy, actually get out of his comfort zone this year and head into Montreal and go down for a great evening at the Gary Carter memorial service remembrance we had at the Hurley's. Got to meet some great people from the station. Got to meet Brian Wilde, who I actually am a huge fan of, Mr. Common Sense, who he is in my books. It was great to actually walk around like an 8-year-old with a baseball, just asking people for autographs, something I've never ever done in my life.
First baseball I've ever signed.
And a lot of people was the same thing, but it was just funny to see their twinkle in the eye when they were all doing it. And it was a great evening. It actually was just fun to get back in touch with something I had lost so much, was the inner kid in myself. And from that day on, I swear to God, I don't see things in the same light. I don't see things with the same eyes. I don't know if I have pink colored sunglasses on or what, but you guys do make a difference. And it's really, really important that you keep up the great work, guys.
Well, I'll tell you what, you made a difference too that night. The Cedars Cancer Institute informed me that we raised over $11,000 for the Sarah Cook Fund that evening.
It was an incredible night for a great, great, great cause.
We will do it again, I promise you.
Until we meet again, my friends.
Chef, thank you so much. Your patronage is really appreciated.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Let's keep these going. Let's go to George in God's country. Good evening, George.
Hey, how's it going, Dave and Jay? How's it going?
What's going on, George?
Oh, nothing much. I was just quiet, just listening to those two boys talk away.
They were pretty good, eh?
And Brian, and it was like if I was in school and I was being not lectured, but it was like a lesson to be learned, because it really made a lot of sense, the conversation.
There are so many smart people in this industry who have so many things to say that are so often constrained by the beat that they cover. And what a pleasure to be able to hear Brian and Francois just talk and say what's really on their minds and know that they don't have the constraint of it being only a 2-minute television hit, or that they have to talk about Markov's knee. That was a real pleasure.
This is one of the best shows you've had.
Thank you.
Even I've been listening to your show for a while now, and you know that.
You've been on this since the start, George. We appreciate that.
I just wanted also to wish a happy belated birthday to my friend Jay.
Hey, Opa.
Thank you, George.
According to my calculation, Jay, I'm 2 years older than you, so that you must be celebrating your 27th birthday.
I believe that George Bush calls that fuzzy math.
Yeah. Again, it was to my understanding that there would be no math during the show. So please. No, unfortunately, I'm not 27. I'll still say that I'm 2 years younger than you, George, but I am 36.
Well, I wish I was 36. Let's just leave it at that.
You'll never see 36 again, huh, George?
No, maybe I'm 36 squared.
No.
George, thank you so much for the call and for everything you've done this year. Yes, sir.
Dave?
Yes.
I just wanted to wish both you and Jay all the very best for the holiday season. Yeah. And at the same time, I'm going to pronounce 2013 as a great year for the Kaufman Show. And we're going to work hard because you have an audience out there that's going to get you into prime time because you deserve to be on the radio 5 times a week, not once a week.
From your lips, Georgie, thank you so much for the call.
Good night.
Have a great night. Let's do one more call. We've got Ron in Montreal North. Hello, Ron.
Hi, you guys. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. So belated happy birthday to you, Jay.
Thank you very much,
okay.
Ron.
And one quick thing, okay? You mentioned something about panic attacks a while ago.
Did we?
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember.
You in a tweet and about the ball player or something or the golfer. Anyways, I will write you something. I suffer from panic attacks.
Send me an email anytime. SaveTheExpos@hotmail.com.
Okay. I suffer from panic attacks. Anyways, what I wanted to say was, geez, I wish somebody would get in touch with that with Mr. Shatner and actually write a book about him. That guy is a walking encyclopedia.
I know, it's fantastic, isn't it?
And I hate to see old people and all that knowledge and all that history and everything just disappear when they go. I think it's sad.
I agree with that.
I've always loved meeting old people, you know.
Well, I'd like to think that our show helps contribute to that oral history.
Definitely. And you guys have done a great show, okay? Great show this year, great show tonight. Keep up the good work. All the best for the new year. Happy holidays, okay?
Thank you, Ron, and we appreciate all your comments and tweets and again, you've also been with us throughout the year. And,
I listen every day.
I remember the first time you called. You called to yell at us. We explained ourselves to you, and we've been friends ever since, and I appreciate it.
I listen every Monday.
Well, I thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Hey, on my heart.
What else would I do on a Monday night?
I feel like that should be the tagline.
Yeah.
Listen to the Kaufman Show. What else are you going to do on a Monday night?
Yeah. It's a great thing.
Ron, thank you so much.
Okay. Have fun, guys.
Thank you. On Twitter, Mo Giblack, who is at the Blue Jays 2013. I feel like that's a very, let's keep our fingers crossed. Let's hope that means good things. Great show tonight. Really impressive. Thank you, John. We appreciate it. Few things that jump out to me from this year, Jay, just off the top of my head. And Andrew mentioned one. We would not be where we are without Gary Carter. Mm-hmm. This year really... Gary Carter was such an inspiration this year, and the second that we found out that he was sick, it really changed the outlook for a lot of things in this town. There would not have been a Montreal baseball project if Gary Carter hadn't have passed away. And our listeners were integral. I mean, that tribute show that we did with your brother and with Anakin and... Sorry, with your brother and with Steph Miles and Jonah Carey. That, to me, was really what this is all about. And we've forged so many connections with so many people, not just in Montreal, but really across North America. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Expos and that bond. And for me, that was a big one. We've had a lot of discoveries this year as well. We discovered Dave Zirin this year, which... by far my favorite guest. I think we've had Dave on about 10 times now, and every time is better than the last. The guy is brilliant, and we are so fortunate to have him on our show whenever we want.
And it's his pleasure to do it too. He's so kind that way. He never hesitates. You ask him, he's like, yeah, I'll be there, no problem. And when he gets on, he's great every single time.
Edge of Sports on Twitter. He is a must follow along with well, all three of our guests tonight, Bruce, Brian, and Francois. Kaufman Show Band of the Year, I think, has to go to the Arkells.
We'll give it to the Arkells.
Were a revelation this year. And I'll tell you what, when I first found their music, much like when I first started listening to Sarah Jane Scouten, who we'll give as a close second for
musician. What about the Jimmy Riggers?
They're a distant third.
They're a distant third, yeah. They deserve that.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. That's what they get for calling in with the Schwarzenegger voice box.
Yeah,
on the,
jerks.
Right after my protest segment, you know? Get a little tone, a little feel, you know? And maybe we'll blame alcohol. I don't know. I don't know, Jay. I really don't know. No, the Jimmy Riggers are wonderful, and we really appreciate them as well. And we've had a lot of great guests. The Simpsons Show, to me, was an absolute highlight. And, you know, I go back and I listened to it a couple of months ago, and it's a lot better in my head. I feel like I wish we could have done it now. And funnily enough, today is the anniversary of the first ever appearance of The Simpsons.
Okay.
If you listen to the podcast tomorrow.
On MTV?
On The Tracy Ullman Show.
The Tracy Ullman Show.
The Tracy Ullman Show. Yeah. That was a fun one. We've tackled so many serious topics.
Right. Some not so serious.
And then we've had things like Rob Delaney on the show.
Yeah.
Or Steve Patterson or Rodney Ramsey. Len from Skunk Magazine. Remember those comedians coming in?
Sure.
It was... I say this often, but I love this. And I think any of you that listen can tell how much I love this. And I know you do too, Jay. This is the most fun. Just the thought that this can be a career is the most exciting thing in the world. And, you know, we're taking a couple of weeks off, and I think we're going to recharge. And it just seems silly to do a show on Christmas Eve. And frankly, things are going good for me, and I don't want to do a show on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
I want to go have fun.
Yeah. Well, I haven't missed a Monday since I started here, I don't think, to tell you the truth.
Jay, you have been here every Monday.
Yeah.
I have missed two.
I've done every single show.
Yeah. I have missed two, both because of Bruce Springsteen. And hold on, Jimmy. Does somebody want to talk?
We'll put him on, Jimmy.
We'll let him.
It's all right. As long as I don't have to hear you anymore, Jimmy.
Best thing about the Kaufman Show being late night is the... fact that we can end whenever the hell we want.
Right.
That to me really does it. We've got Sheila on line one. Hello, Sheila.
Hi. I'm going to be on just for a second because I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I appreciate the baseball talk especially.
Aw, I love you, Sheila.
And
I don't know you, but I love you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but the other thing that I know it has nothing to do with sports, but it's important to me for you to know that you guys were there for me and for a lot of people after the earthquake. And I called and you spoke to me and you stayed till the wee hours. And I just want you to know that even though that has nothing to do with sports, that really meant a lot to me because being from L.A. and being there during large earthquakes and having radio stations there that allowed you to call in and talk and hear, you were there. I mean, I tried to find, I won't say which one, another radio station, and they were doing, you know, a whatever show they were doing.
Sheila, I want to thank you, and I will graciously accept your comments on behalf of the station. That was Mo Khan and the Midnight Snack. And the night of the earthquake, Mo stayed on and talked about the earthquake. And, I wonder how often we get confused with the other shows.
I don't think she was confusing us. I think she was thanking the station.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, once again, on behalf of the Academy, I'd like to accept this award.
Yeah. And on behalf of Mo Khan.
That's something that we try to do at this station. It's
good for Mo. Good on Mo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? She said she didn't want to mention it. I thought it was wild that the news station in the city wasn't live that night.
Right.
And it's kind of similar to the... what was it, Jay? There was something a couple of weeks ago where I said, I want to talk about this, and you said, I don't know if we should, and then you were driving in, and another station had a psychic on, and you thought, well, if they're going to talk with a psychic, then we can deal with this serious issue.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it?
I love, geez, what was it? Oh, it was the Palestinian.
It was Gaza, of course.
It was Gaza.
Right.
It was that situation.
Yeah, which nobody complained about.
No, so nobody. Why would they complain about it?
Because about Gaza on TSN 690.
I'm hearing psychic, and I'm hearing about UFOs, and I'm like, really, is this what it's come to now? You know what? Screw it. Let's talk about what's going on in the world and not pseudoscience and make-believe garbage.
And we try to talk about the real issues, and I do appreciate what
and try to
saying.
Keep it sports-related when we can.
And you know, I often say I hate talking about the who should be the third-line center. I kind of do that with who should be the fifth starter. That's just my version of it, and it's more palatable to me. And again, I don't know if there's just this horrible taste in my mouth from forcing myself to talk hockey off a miserable season last year. But we have this studio for a certain amount of time every week, and I'd much rather talk about things that are important to me. And if they don't necessarily correspond to the world of sports, hope you all don't mind. And I hope you like the Hip and Springsteen and the Arkells. And who the hell else do we play?
No, that's about it.
Plaskett.
That's about it. This is your show.
A little Wilson Pickett notice writing thrown in for good measure.
Sure.
But
a little Anakin Slade here and there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The show wouldn't be a show without Anakin Slade. That's another person who's really meant a lot to us this year. Alex Anthopoulos has been a great guest the four or five times we've had him on. Ellis Valentine was very important to us this year. It's been a fun year, and it's been wonderful to share it with all of you. And yeah, let's hope for better things in 2013 for all of you. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Dave. I'd just like to wish you and yours, your family, a happy holiday season, and don't do anything I would do. Now what you think, stayed out too late, had a little too much to drink, walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have, if you've got enough to get in a cab. There'll be drinks on the house if your house burns down. There's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you face down in our soup, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman.
We'll be back on January 7th.
I don't know.
Happy New Year.
What'd that sound like?